It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today is the 150th anniversary of the Morrill Land Grant College Act. It was signed into law by Abraham Lincoln 150 years ago today. That act paved the way for Iowa State University and many other land grant institutions around the country, making higher education accessible to millions of working class Americans. Later this hour, we're going to talk about the role of land grant institutions today, and we'll also talk about what their role can and should be in the future. With me right now is Allison Sheridan of Iowa State University. She is University Museum's Collections Manager and Communications Coordinator. Hello, Allison.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, and what an occasion.
Well, we've talked a little bit about the man behind the Morrill Act, but tell me exactly what the Morrill Act said. As Abraham Lincoln signed it in 1862, what did it do?
The Morrill Act, sponsored by Justin Smith Morrill, encouraged an educational revolution by providing federal lands to each state that embraced this new vision for education. The states that actually agreed to the provisions of the act, and those would come in stages, would then sell the lands to fund the establishment of at least one land grant college in their state that taught agriculture and the mechanic arts. It was an effort to educate the laboring classes, which was a movement that started even before Justin Smith Morrill got his hands on it.
So where did this land come from?
The land was actually selected by each of the states. And in fact, when Justin Smith Morrill initially tried to pass this legislation several years before, there was such concern about the lands such as Iowa lands, where we have fertile farm fields, being snatched up by other states. And so there was provisions to protect those lands actually in the law. And people like Benjamin Gew and other Iowa citizens who helped to really formulate the Iowa, what we now know as Iowa State University, actually went and selected the lands, and they selected prime lands so that they could get the best dollar for those lands when they sold them.
I was talking again a few minutes ago about Senator Justin Smith Morrill, and he lived in Vermont, which is clearly, things were very different back in the 1850s and 60s. But when we think about land grant institutions, we think about the Midwestern United States. Was there a movement afoot already in Iowa, in Michigan, in other states in the Midwest to create institutions like this?
Absolutely. In fact, the person that isn't often talked about is Jonathan Baldwin Turner. And he actually wrote an essay outlining a plan for these types of education of mechanical arts and agriculture in several years before Justin Smith Morrill even came around. In fact, he pitched it to his Illinois senator, who was Lyman Trumbull at the time, and Lyman said, you know, it's probably best that this be pitched by an Eastern senator because it will have more of an impact. And so the movement technically did start in the Midwest, and so that's a very good point. And then the Eastern senators' influence was used to eventually get it passed the second go around. Also in Iowa, we had Iowa State actually was founded in 1858, several years before the Morrill Act was passed. And the Morrill Act actually provided funds for that fledgling college to get off the ground and build a building and start admitting students.
Okay, so it was designated under the Morrill Act in 1864, but it had been founded in 1858.
Correct.
When there are lots of land-grant institutions that can make actually a very strong claim for being the first, because there were so many of them being created on the state level at the same time that became designated under this act later on and morphed into what we now know as a land-grant institution. But Iowa is the first state legislature that accepted this legislation. What was that process?
Actually, Governor Kirkwood at the time in 1862 called a special session of Iowa legislature to inform the Senate and House members of the Morrill Act's passage. And he pointed out that Iowa was entitled to 240,000 acres of public land. He urged the General Assembly to move quickly so that Iowa could secure that entire amount of land within their limits. Again, that fear of others snatching good Iowa land was prevalent. And so he wrote, I have a quote here from him. He wrote, "It is a munificent donation and for a most worthy purpose. It is of great importance that immediate action be had by you touching this grant." And again, he's referencing the Morrill Act and accepting. 7 days later, on September 11th, they actually accepted that with a resounding vote. And within several years, there was quite a little battle going on between University of Iowa and Iowa State about who would actually receive the funds that were then provided from the sale of that land.
So this time was of the essence for Iowa lawmakers. They felt like the pressure was on to take advantage of this as quickly as possible.
Absolutely.
Was there any controversy in Iowa over accepting it?
There was. There was a lot of people, and maybe this is the origin of the Iowa-Iowa State rivalry. I have no idea. But there was a lot of people that actually wanted Iowa to have because they were already an established school teaching some of the more classical education, they actually wanted to have an addition of agriculture, an addition of mechanical arts, and expand that already existing school, as opposed to Iowa State, which was literally a building on a prairie. It didn't have much to it. They thought, well, how is this money going to benefit them? And in fact, there were people in Iowa, like I said, Benjamin Gew earlier on, and several others that were very, very active and very influential in the agricultural movement that really impacted Iowa State receiving these funds.
Why could only one institution receive the funds?
You know, it could have been split, but they never did choose to do that because they had to fulfill the terms of the act. And so to do that, they really had to put all of their eggs in one basket. And again, we're talking about the military education as well that was added into the Morrill Act because this was the time of the Civil War. And so you also had not only agriculture and the practical arts, you had to have some place to do military education as well.
So agriculture, engineering, ROTC, and home economics. Mm-hmm. When, the college was being founded that has become Iowa State University, mm-hmm. How was that informed by the Morrill Act? How influenced were the founders of the college? Because I understand it had already been founded, but as it morphed through this, how did it change because of the provisions of the act?
It impacted most significantly because it was a financial injection of a belief that was already well-founded in Iowa in the agriculture and educating the farmers in making sure that the laboring class had an equal opportunity to be educated as well. And what it did for Iowa State and what it continues to do today is it allows Iowa State to take that education and take it outside of the classroom and help provide all Iowans services, whether it's through extension or a pamphlet or, in previous years, WOI TV, WOI radio. All of those were factors in spreading the word, spreading the knowledge, sharing, and making it actually science with practice, which is our Iowa State motto.
The inclusion of home economics in the Morrill Act, did that influence Iowa State to be more open to women students, female students?
Well, and right off the bat, it was an inclusive school. In the very first graduating class, there were two women that graduated. And in fact, in President Welch, our very first president, in his inaugural speech, he actually stressed the importance that we were opening our doors not only to those big farm boys, but to everyone, regardless of race, regardless of color, regardless of gender. And it was, you know, whether you were poor or you were rich, you were welcomed. And it what mattered most was in between your ears and not anywhere else. And so he stressed the role of women and the significance that this act, because it was so inclusive, actually had. And the land-grant colleges were some of the most inclusive universities in and colleges in the United States.
What did it cost for someone to go to one of these new land-grant institutions?
Oh, it was free. Unfortunately, it's free no longer.
But we're all very aware of that. Yes.
That was one of the key factors. It was free tuition. And, you know, when you're talking about, you know, deeply impoverished families, they couldn't afford to send their students to a fancy university. And that's why the division between the laboring class and the academic class was so deep. And so when you open your doors and you say free for all, it's a wonderful opportunity for those people. Now, that ended in many years ago now, long before my time at Iowa State. And now, of course, we know we pay tuition, and it's on the rise usually. But you pay tuition in a modest way. You certainly don't pay huge amounts of funds that you would at maybe a private college.
When it was free, how was it decided who could come? How did people qualify?
There was actually an entrance exam. And so imagine your little schoolhouses throughout Iowa. They're actually informed about what is needed to enter these schools. And so they're teaching just like we do today. We teach towards the SAT or the ACT. They were teaching skill sets that would help with the entrance exams at the time. And let me tell you, I've seen some of the original entrance exams, and they are so incredibly hard. I don't think I would have gotten into Iowa State taking that entrance exam.
One of the things that many land-grant institutions in the United States have in common are truly beautiful campuses with a significant amount of green space. And I guess I had always made the assumption that that was because there was this land designated for the university. But as we've been talking today, clearly the land was intended to fund the university. Was some of this land also used to actually have a place for the campus?
It was not. The land for Iowa was actually very far removed from the site in Ames now. The land that was chosen for the college was actually chosen ahead of time. And so when we were founded, shortly thereafter, they chose Story County as the site for the school. And then several years later came along the Morrill Act. And so the lands that were actually sold were in other areas of Iowa. And the land, the beautiful campus that we have, we're very fortunate to have, we actually owe that development to some of the early forefathers at Iowa State who were experts in landscape planning and landscape design.
That is interesting, though, because it is something that you do find at other land-grant institutions as well. Was that just part of the ethic, do you think, that there would be a beautiful green space for students to study and learn in?
Well, and I think that's very true. I also think that you had a student body that was coming to Iowa State at that point, and they needed a place to practice what they were learning in the classroom. And so we had things like the Model Farm, which is around the old farmhouse, which is the original building on Iowa State's campus. You had things like orchards and very specific tree varieties that were planted across campus. And those were all part of either faculty research and or classroom teaching.
A few years ago, as Iowa State University celebrated its sesquicentennial, the Morrill Act, the actual original Morrill Act, came to the Iowa State campus. What was it like to have that on campus, that actual document?
It was so meaningful. I was actually one of the people that helped to get that act on campus. And the fact that we were bringing such a profound document, and again, this document was signed in the moments when Lincoln was dealing with land via the Homestead Act, via the Pacific Railway Act. I mean, land was gold at that point, and that was your currency. And so this was the way to use the land and open up education so that people like Jonathan Baldwin Turner, even Justin Smith Morrill, who was never afforded a college degree, could have the opportunity to come and be educated, and be educated at a level that was recognized and had an impact on citizens.
What do you think students at Iowa State University and other land-grant schools should know about the Morrill Act? Because when I went to school, I walked past the then derelict, now beautiful Morrill Hall, and never thought about it, honestly. Never gave it any consideration other than thinking that's a pretty building. What should people know?
I think, honestly, every single person that sets foot and graduates through a land-grant university should know the story, and they should know why they're there and what they do and how that hopefully impacts whatever state they end up in. And hopefully they take on that legacy of science with practice. And, you know, I say science and people think, oh, science, biology, that kind of thing. It's more than that. It's the outreach. It's the extension. It's sharing the knowledge and having the opportunity to be admitted into a university type setting. It should be rewarding enough, but knowing that you're a land-grant graduate, you know that those schools were founded with a very distinct purpose, and that purpose was, like I said earlier, inclusive of women, inclusive of all races, and also help teach and educate the masses of America.
Iowa was a young state when it accepted this legislation and set about turning the state agricultural college into a land-grant institution. How do you think it has shaped the state of Iowa to have that kind of ethic?
I honestly think that the biggest impact on every Iowan can be seen through things like our extension efforts. Iowa State is known for its research. We are known for having wonderful inventions that have impacted the lives of everyone. We have this reputation, and we are a research one institution, yet everyone on the campus has that sense of pride in the school, has a sense of pride in their work, and again, it's that ethic, that work ethic that really helps to keep us motivated, and it's all built around the structure that the Morrill Act provided and the mission of Iowa State University.
Allison, thank you.
Thank you.
Allison Sheridan of Iowa State University. She is University Museum's Collections Manager and Communications Coordinator. Today, the Iowa State University Campanile will toll the bell 150 times in celebration of the sesquicentennial of the signing of the Morrill Land-Grant College Act. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about land-grant institutions today in 2012, what role they serve now and what role or roles they may serve in the future. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.